couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Terminator, Dark Fate, Harriet, Jojo Rabbit, and The Irishman. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Blob and The Devil Rides Out. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First, a rest in peace to John Witherspoon, a very, very, very funny actor who passed away this week at age 77. He would never be like a serious actor, but he was always this whimsical, crazy actor. He was in movies like, I don't know why I keep remembering him from movies like Soul Plane, but I think he was in the Friday movies. And I always found him extremely funny, even when the material he was in wasn't particularly entertaining. So it's sad to see John Witherspoon go. I always found something interesting and entertaining about his delivery in comedy, regardless of the material he was doing. Another piece of news that's kind of just interesting is it's November now. It is November 2019, and that officially means that we are in the Blade Runner year. We all knew that 2019 was when Blade Runner takes place, but if you watch the beginning of the movie, it says Los Angeles, November 2019. This is now officially the time of Blade Runner, just as 4 years ago, it was officially the time of Back to the Future Part 2 with hoverboards and the self-drying jackets and vacations in Vietnam. So it's interesting. We have now passed another cinematic time milestone. I remember when 1984 rolled around and they're like, oh, well, now we're in the future for that. And then 2001 rolled around. These are significant dates that we keep seeing showing up and we keep surpassing. So congratulations, human race. You're still alive and kicking, but who knows how much longer you're going to last. The final thing I want to talk about in terms of news, this is more of a serious issue, and a lot of people in the mainstream haven't paid attention to this. I just know a lot of cinemaphiles and movie fans are kind of losing their minds over this. Apparently, Netflix is developing a technology that will allow you to watch something at 1.5 speed. You know, currently now you just play a movie and it plays at the speed that it was made. And I'm seeing a lot of people lose their minds over this, saying, how dare they? This is terrible. It's the end of cinema. It's the beginning of the end of watching this stuff, because they find it offensive that somebody would want to watch something fast. And I get that. On a certain perspective, for the filmmaker, you make a movie the pace that the movie's meant to be made. And I get that. And that makes sense, because if you've ever watched something in fast speed, it looks a little bit silly. I remember I used to have a laptop that had a 1.5 and a 2x speed option in their playback of a DVD. And I mean, it looks silly when you do it that quickly, but I got to admit, I employed that a couple times. Sometimes when I had a lot of things to watch, in particular like a TV show that I needed to get through, I sometimes use that if I was just in a time crunch. They also do this with recorded books. Apparently, Audible allows you to speed up a recorded book to 1.5 times or maybe 2x. And the argument I've heard people say is content creators spend a lot of time and focus to make their content the right pacing. And I get that, but here's the thing. This is the reality. As a content creator, once you create your content and it's out there, you don't get to choose how people decide they want to watch it. And there are people who will watch a movie with the subtitles. For example, I once told somebody that I was watching a foreign film and I used the dubbing, and they freaked out at me. And they're like, no, you got to use the subtitles. It's pure cinema. And I'm like, I'm watching from across the room. I'm multitasking at the time. I can't just sit down and devote 100% of my attention because sometimes I have to multitask. This is my job. I've also gotten people taking issue with that. People saying, well, you shouldn't be checking Twitter or looking at email or doing busy work while you're watching a movie. I'm like, that's not your decision to make. I mean, if I'm in a movie theater and I'm disturbing other people, but if I've rented a movie and I have it on and I'm checking email or even playing a game, if that's my decision, as long as it's not interrupting it for other people. And I know that there are some people that believe, like a book, if you talk about audiobooks, that a book needs to be read, like actually sat down and read, cracking the pages open, and that listening to a book isn't the same. And it's not, but, you know, there's some people that have 2-hour commutes. There are some people, like I go on long road trips now and then, and I like to have a recorded book. And sometimes that's my only way to catch up on stuff and be able to read certain things, is because I'm so busy. When I'm otherwise engaged, that's an option. So I do think if you're going to be watching, you know, a movie, it might be a little bit much. But imagine if you're on Netflix and you're trying to get through. You say you want to watch Better Call Saul when it comes back, and there's 3 or 4 seasons of that already, and you want to blast through those episodes. Maybe a 1.5 speed option is worthwhile. Again, if you're the content creator, you've spent the time making the content, and that's good. But you don't get to choose how people watch it. You don't get to dictate whether somebody has the subtitles or not, or uses the original translation, or if they watch it fast, or if they watch it on a small screen or a big screen or on their phone or across the room, or go to a theater to see it. You don't get to choose that. You get to give the options, but however somebody wants to watch it is how they want to watch it. So if Netflix wants to develop this, I don't think it's going to destroy cinema. And I really don't think that everyone's going to be using it for everything they watch, but I think that's going to come in useful at times. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is 21 Bridges, which opens on November 22nd.
We will catch these guys in the next 3 or 4 hours. They vanish. How are you going to do this?
There are 21 bridges in and out of the island. Shut them down.
What island?
Manhattan.
They told me you were the guy who kills killers.
Beautiful. What could go wrong? You got a trigger.
You better have perfect diction calling me a trigger.
This is a setup.
Call it what you want. I just did. If you go down this road, you're looking over your shoulder the rest of your life.
I'd rather look the devil in the eye.
This I find interesting because it is a movie for Chadwick Boseman, who had a bit of a career before Black Panther showed up, but he pretty much just did like biopics of like Jackie Robinson and James Brown. And now that he's in Black Panther, he's huge. He's like one of the biggest names ever because he's in one of these big Marvel franchises. This is him trying to stake his claim into a movie of his own. This one looks okay. It looks like a gritty cop movie. And I said this about Black and Blue last week. Even if it's a good movie, it does feel like, you know, we've been down this road a couple of times. It does not seem like it's a unique story. We'll see how well this one does. It's coming out right at Thanksgiving, so I think they're trying to put it in that tentpole season, but it might get lost, actually. I haven't been hearing much about this. The next one I want to hit really quickly is The Grudge, which opens on January 3rd.
This is Detective Muldoon.
This is Peter Spencer. Something happened to me at 44 Rayburn Drive.
Someone was murdered at that house.
Why did he never go into that place?
Something never felt right about it.
Do you think that the body they found's related? Hello? I went to the house. Hello? Police department! I think something followed me home.
This is the studio trying to reboot this franchise. Of course, they made The Grudge, 15 years ago? As a remake, in the American remake. And they really tied it to the Japanese original story. It's a part of the American version also took place in Japan, and it drew a lot from the Japanese ghost story. This one looks like it's firmly putting it in America. And so it looks like it might be an enjoyable movie. It's coming out in January. I don't necessarily ding that against a horror movie because horror movies come out in January all the time. This might be fun to watch. It looks like it's drawing from the original story and some of the shots, but it looks like it's also deviating from it. As long as you keep the essence of what The Grudge is about, I'm going to enjoy this movie. It could be terrible, but these movies tend to do well and they tend to be fun, so I am kind of looking forward to this one. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Harriet and Jojo Rabbit. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Harriet. This biopic examines the life of legendary Underground Railroad conductor Harriet Tubman, from her time as a slave to her conquest to free others.
I don't know if you know how extraordinary this is, but you have made it 100 miles to freedom all by yourself. Would you like to pick a new name to mark your freedom?
Harriet Tubman. If I'm free, my family should be too. I made up my mind, I'm going back. You're confident, composed. When trouble comes, you'll be ready. I made it this far on my own, so don't you tell me what I can't do.
I want to say, I'm not Harriet Tubman's biographer, so I don't know everything about her, but I know enough that I will say she is a bona fide great American hero. And her story is amazing. If you look at what she went through and the determination that she had and how good she was at what she did, she is a fascinating woman and is worth studying and should have a good biopic. With that said, Harriet Tubman deserves a better movie than this. There's so many moments in her life that are these intense moments. She was a spy in the Civil War, and she personally led dozens of slaves to freedom over hundreds of miles, and they really don't focus on that. The woman playing Harriet Tubman, does a fine job, but she's not given enough, I don't think she's given enough depth. And I don't think any of the other characters in there are really given that much depth. I mean, everyone from the other slaves that she's trying to save, or the people working in the Underground Railroad, they're all kind of just these one or two dimensional characters. And the same thing for the bad guy, you know, the slave hunters and the plantation owners. They're these mustache twirling villains that there's no realness to them. They feel like these cardboard two-dimensional characters. It feels like you're reading it from a Classics Illustrated comic from the 60s that's not terribly well written, but it encapsulates the story enough for a child to read. And I remember I'm watching the movie, and anytime you watch a movie, sometimes there are movies that take a couple minutes to get into, and then there's movies that hit the ground running. This one, I'm watching it and I'm just like, okay, am I just getting bored? Did I just not get enough sleep the night before? Because I'm sort of disinterested in what's going on. And then they go from scene to scene, and each scene, just the writing's clunky. The direction is clunky. It's corny. I mean, in a lot of ways, this feels like a TV movie that was made in the 80s or 90s that wasn't one of the big TV movies. Like back in the 80s and 90s, especially the 70s, people don't realize, especially these historical dramas that they would have, they'd have these TV movies and miniseries. I mean, stuff like Roots or The Winds of War or North and South or The Blue and the Gray, if you want to talk about these Civil War films, they had some really well done miniseries and TV movies back in the 70s and 80s. This would not have been one of them. This would have been one of those secondary series that was meant to bridge the gap between Roots and The Blue and the Gray, that you just say, oh, this is one that since the Civil War era slavery movies do well, let's throw this one out. It's just not well done. And that pains me to say, and it's sad, but unfortunately the movie Harriet Tubman's fascinating. Unfortunately, the movie Harriet kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Jojo Rabbit. Taika Waititi directs a satire of hate about a young German boy at the end of World War II who joins the Hitler Youth and has Adolf Hitler as his imaginary best friend.
Are you ready for the best weekend ever?
Yes, I am!
Hey, Jojo, my old friend.
Hi, Adolf.
What's wrong, little man?
They call me a scared rabbit. Jojo
Rabbit! Let them say whatever they want. People used to say a lot of nasty things about me. Oh, this guy's a lunatic. Oh, look at that psycho. He's gonna get us all killed.
This movie is really interesting to pair with Harriet because both films deal with the subject of hate and the subject of oppression. And both films feature characters that have abhorrent beliefs. You know, in Harriet, you've got these slave owners and these slave traders that, you know, are dealing in human trafficking. In Jojo Rabbit, you have the Nazis. And even though you don't have the frontline Nazis, you have some Gestapo officers in there. You got the people who are cogs in the wheel of the Nazi machine. And there's a lot of stuff that's played off in comedy with Jojo Rabbit. And I know that's kind of one of the things that gets criticized because people are saying, oh, it's making a joke out of Nazism. It's making them fun and silly. And they really aren't. It's a satire on hate. It's a satire of marginalizing an entire group of people. Like they have this whole scene where they there's a theme throughout it when they're at this Nazi Hitler Youth camp and they're talking about, oh, the Jews do this and they hang from the ceiling and they're like have horns and creatures. They really demonize them and they describe them almost in this realistic view of what this Nazi propaganda poster is. And the reality is, and there's even a scene where the kid, he writes all this down and he's trying to write a compendium of the Jew and a Gestapo officer's looking at it and he's tickled pink because it's such a ludicrous thing that's interpreted by this 10-year-old. The entire movie is from the 10-year-old's point of view. And if you were a 10-year-old and you lived your entire life in Nazi Germany and your entire life was surrounded by Nazi propaganda, you would have this worldview. And it's him waking up from that. It's him realizing things like his mother, who's played by Scarlett Johansson. She takes in this young Jewish woman who's like a teenager and hides her in her house. And when he finds her, he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to handle it. He thinks she's like got these weird superpowers because this is what he's been told. This is what makes the movie so grounded in the reality of a 10-year-old's thinking. And that's kind of the brilliance of it because it shows what the appearance of reality is if somebody believes propaganda and then stripping that away and actually understanding the truth behind it. It's a real loss of innocence story, a loss of the simplicity of how you look at the world. And that is brilliantly constructed under this umbrella of being this satire of hate. And it's a hard-hitting movie. Like the first part of it, the first two-thirds of it are very funny. They have some incredibly hilarious scenes. Taika Waititi plays the image of Hitler, this imaginary best friend, and he's hilarious, and there's some laugh-out-loud moments, but at a certain point, the movie gets very serious, and it shows the safety that the kid has in his propaganda beliefs, and as that starts to strip away, at the same time as society is starting to fall apart around him, he doesn't understand it. He doesn't recognize that that's happening. But as an adult watching it, you're like, oh, no, this is the tail end of World War II. You got the Allies are almost there. And you see it all crumbling away physically and mentally and symbolically. And you realize that society has fallen apart. This kid just doesn't understand that yet. He's not sophisticated enough. There's so much to glean from this movie, and it's so much more than just a goofy romp with the Nazis. It's a satire the way The Producers with Springtime for Hitler was a satire. It's at the level of Mel Brooks, and that's what makes this movie fantastic. This is one of my favorite movies of the year. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Terminator, Dark Fate, and The Irishman.
Yeah!
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and start off with Terminator Dark Fate. Sarah Connor returns to help save a young woman who is being protected by an augmented super soldier from the future.
You may have changed the future, but you didn't change our fate.
I know you're scared, but I'm here to protect you.
I've never seen one like you before. Almost human.
I am human. Just enhanced.
I can see you're very upset. I'm going to help you protect the girl.
This is so frustrating because I love the original Terminator movies, the first and the second. I still think the first one's superior. The first Terminator came out in 1984. It was not a big science fiction blockbuster. It was, in essence, just a low-budget action movie. Yeah, it had a science fiction premise, but once you got past the premise, with very minimal special effects, it almost all took place in modern-day Los Angeles, and it would just had guns and explosions and cars. So it was something that could be told in a very contemporary setting. But the key to it was just a well-written story. And it's a typical time travel story, and it all works. It all gets wrapped up nicely with a bow at the end. But like I said, it was a small movie, and what propelled it wasn't special effects. It has some great action scenes to it, and it has a driving energy to it that works. Fast forward to the second one. And look, I loved Terminator 2 Judgment Day as well. I thought that was a beautiful movie. But part of what made that one work was Cameron used effects that we had never seen before. We had seen a little bit of that fluid dynamic CGI, especially in his movie The Abyss, but he really did a great job putting that together and making it look seamless. I recently rewatched it, and it still holds up effects-wise. And it, even though it had all those special effects, it still had all the practical effects. There were real helicopters blowing up, real trucks crashing into each other, and it really still looked like an authentic movie with effects dropped into the scene. But there was an issue with the fact that it does ruin the nice bow that's at the end of the Terminator. It retcons the mythology, and it doesn't always work. Then they spent the last 20 years trying to do another sequel. This is the fourth Terminator 3 we have. You first had Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines, which I like for a lot of reasons, and I know it doesn't hold up as well, but there's certain things I like about that movie. Terminator Salvation, which was absolute dog poop. There was Terminator Genesis, which I actually thought was interesting, and it was, at least, it had new ideas. I will give it that. It completely dumps all over the retconning. It completely dumps all over the original continuity, but that's okay. I thought it introduced some really neat ideas. There was also a TV series, The Sarah Connor Chronicles, and really, honestly, this movie reminds me more of that. It is very derivative of the original stories in the first two movies, where it's just the soldiers helping a woman survive. The big difference with this one, and I think this is one of the reasons why it's getting a lot of critical love, is because all the main characters, with the exception of the bad Terminator, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, who shows up at one point, it's all female characters. It's Sarah Connor. It's this woman. It's Mackenzie Davis playing this augmented super soldier. So there is a certain gender politic boost that they think this is getting from woke film critics out there. And that's nonsense. I mean, I don't care about the genitals on the people playing the characters. Give me a good movie. Give me a good story. And I don't think we're getting a good story here. The special effects aren't even anything to write home about, because they're nothing new. And in fact, what we're getting more and more CGI. There's entire sequences where I'm like, I don't even know how much of this is real. This all looks like it's CGI. You know, at least when they had the chase down the LA River in Terminator 2, they were really blowing stuff up, and they were blowing up trucks and tires were flying around. This one, they do some interesting stunt work, but I don't know how much of it's stunt work or it's just people behind a blue screen. There's so much effects in it that it just becomes kind of boring to watch. Terminator should be groundbreaking. Terminator should be different. And Once again, they just kind of flounder around, and all the new people, this new, basically a young, another Sarah Connor, this young woman that they're helping, she's forgettable. Mackenzie Davis is okay as, I guess, the female Kyle Reese with superpowers. And then the guy who plays the new Terminator, he's no Robert Patrick, and he's certainly no Schwarzenegger. And that leaves Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they're fun to watch, but I think it's about time for this series to self-terminate. It's still entertaining if you want the escapism explosions, you can do it, but I would say go to a matinee, because Terminator Dark Fate just barely kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Irishman. Martin Scorsese directs this film about a mob assassin who ends up working closely with union boss Jimmy Hoffa.
Hi, Frank. This is Jimmy Hoffa.
Glad to meet you.
Glad to meet you, too, even if it's over the phone. Well, you know, there's a situation going on now, Frank. Big business and the government, they're trying to pull us down.
You might be demonstrating a failure to show appreciation.
I know things they don't know I know.
You can't miss the big picture.
I was fortunate enough to be flown out to Los Angeles last week to check out The Irishman. I saw it in the Chinese theater, and they brought in Scorsese and De Niro and Pesci and Harvey Keitel and Ray Romano. They had the whole cast there. It was really cool and a great experience. But let's look at the movie itself very specifically. This movie is getting limited release now. It's in select theaters, and it's going to be rolling out in more theaters throughout the month. And then at Thanksgiving, you can watch it yourself on Netflix. On a certain degree, I think it's a good thing that it's going to be going on Netflix, because it's a 3.5-hour movie. And that's a long haul to sit in a theater for. And that's nothing against Martin Scorsese, and that's nothing against making the movie. It's just it's tough to sit down in a full 3.5-hour chunk to watch a movie. Sometimes you're going to have to go to the bathroom. You're going to want to get something to eat. And what's nice about releasing something like this on Netflix is you can pause in the middle of it. Maybe you can go get dinner, or maybe you can go to the bathroom, or maybe you're going to watch part of it one day and then the next day watch the second half. I think that works for these long form movies. I think that that's a good advantage. And this goes back to what I talked about in the first segment, where once you create the content and you put it out there, however people choose to watch it, what they find most enjoyable, that's their prerogative. It's a slow burn movie, but it's very well done. And it's different than Goodfellas, because Goodfellas has this aggressive energy. Even just from the moment the movie starts, it's just pounding away and getting to the ending. And that's worth seeing. It's a little bit more paced like Casino, if you want to talk about these mob movies. It's more like Casino in the pacing. But that's okay. That's not a criticism. That's just a comparison. I don't think this movie would work if it had a fast pace. Part of what makes this film work is the suspense, the characters talking to each other, and you know somebody's going to do something bad to somebody else. And then there are times where it does move fast, where somebody shows up and then just gets shot in the face. The other thing is the movie is more than just about this story of this guy who works in the mob who meets Jimmy Hoffa. There's a certain ending to the Jimmy Hoffa story. But there's like an hour more of the movie after that. And that's okay, because that's what it's about. And it has these themes that Scorsese has dealt with before about redemption and loss and regret and forgiveness and religion. And I think that's all touched on in this film. It also does some brilliant use of de-aging technology. It makes Pacino, as I think he's in his 70s, they regress him to his 30s and 40s playing Hoffa. And that allows him to take Joe Pesci, who's always played the junior to Robert De Niro, even though they're the same age. They're able to regress Robert De Niro to younger, so Pesci plays the older, more seasoned person. And it's a great role for Pesci, because it's a very divergent role from what he's used to. But the de-aging technology, it's not just that it looks cool, it opens it up to cast people and tell a story with multiple different ages rather than just putting on old man makeup, which it looks much more effective. Ultimately, I'm going to say The Irishman is a great film, definitely worth checking out, whether you're going to see it in the theater or on Netflix. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring The Blob and The Devil Rides Out. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up with some box office. It was not a great time for new box office movies because, what was Countdown? I think was the top new movie, and that made $8 million, which is not terrible. I mean, these movies cost like nothing to make anyways, but it made only about $8 million. It came in number five. Black and Blue went even lower. It was lower in the eights. The movie that made the most and won the weekend was Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. And it went back and forth. What's interesting is Joker was thought to have done better. And then Maleficent, they were like, it was a horse race. They were separated by about $120,000 between the two of them. But Maleficent ended up being on top, and then Joker, and then Addams Family, which is doing surprisingly well. It's at like $73 million. So that's kind of impressive. For a movie that everyone seemed to pan and didn't want to see. I'm talking critics wise. And then Zombieland in its second weekend, it dropped about 55%. Gemini Man is tanking. It's falling fast. It's not going to make $100 million in the States, which is a low point for a Will Smith movie. And then, of course, The Lighthouse is, it's not making a ton of money. I would not expect The Lighthouse to make a ton of money, simply because it's not for everyone. But what's funny is Downton Abbey finally dropped out of the top 10. Downton Abbey, which has made $92 million already, and that's a huge hit. That's really what's happening with the box office. Not a whole lot was going on. This week, everyone's predicting that Terminator is going to win, and it probably will because there's nothing else to really compete with it. You got Motherless Brooklyn out there. I didn't talk about it this week because they didn't screen it, but that one I don't think is getting a big push in terms of money wise. And then the smaller ones, you know, Harriet, I don't think is going to bring in a lot of cash. Terminator could win, but it still could win with a pretty disappointing $30 million range. I mean, people are predicting in the 40 millions, but I think it's going to be lower than that. I just don't get the sense that there's any excitement for this movie whatsoever. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. It was Halloween this week. I know it's November. I get it. We are past Halloween, but I had a very busy October, so I didn't get to spend as much time enjoying my Halloween time. So let's talk about some horror movies that came out before Halloween, but it's this week, so they are worth talking about. These are both from Shout Factory, or rather Scream Factory, since that's their genre horror movie arm, and they are re-releases. The first one I want to talk about is The Blob. This is the 1988 version. It's a collector's edition. An amorphous and carnivorous life form crashes to Earth and begins to absorb the residents of a small town.
The organism is growing at a geometric rate. By all accounts, it's at least 1,000 times its original mass.
Nobody believes me about what happened tonight.
What did happen?
You were there. You saw.
Plasmic life form that hunts its prey. Predator.
I want that organism alive.
I think you ticked it off.
I have enjoyed The Blob ever since it came out. I never saw it in its initial theatrical run, but I saw it at an all-night movie marathon. They showed the original Blob and then The Blob from 1988, which is, it's a great 80s classic. I really think it exemplifies 80s horror movies and 80s monster movies. I mean, it's not a slasher film, so it takes a different diversion, but it feels like your typical 80s movie that's a monster movie rather than a slasher film. It's very violent, actually. It is graphic and disturbing at times, and that's kind of part of the joy in it, is because for a horror movie fan, I don't like them pulling the punches, and you get this a lot in movies nowadays, and it really started to take hold right around the turn of the century. They'd have PG-13 horror movies, and I don't mind a good PG-13 horror film, but a movie like The Blob is a special effects movie, and it is grisly and gross, and everybody who gets killed by the blob comes to a very this uncomfortable demise because it's a caustic creature that dissolves human flesh. And it has some of those moments that remind me almost to the point of like The Fly 2, if you remember that sequel to David Cronenberg's The Fly, in I think 1990. It feels like it's a nice pairing with The Blob. It also stars Shawnee Smith, who I have a real thing for. I always liked her when I was a kid. And you've got Kevin Dillon, the low rent Matt Dillon. It is a perfect update of a 1950s horror movie. I think that there's only a handful of these sort of classic B horror movies that have had effective and sometimes even better remakes. Stuff like The Thing, which, you know, you had originally Howard Hawks' The Thing from Another World, and now you have The Thing. That's superior. You know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1956, and then you had the 1978 movie, which is far superior. And The Blob is also up there as one of those remakes that kind of improves on the original. And I gotta say, I had such fun rewatching this, and I watch this periodically. You always have a trade-off between balancing the contrast and doing too much digital noise reduction. They don't do much digital noise reduction in certain scenes of low light that they've brought the contrast out, so you do get a little bit of graininess in the transfer, but it's a fantastic movie to watch. Plus, it's loaded with some new stuff. It's got a new commentary from the director and the cinematographer and the special effects artist. It's got another commentary with Shawnee Smith and interviews, a whole bunch of interviews. Shout Factory always does a bunch of interviews with classic people. It has the original audio commentary, and it has the isolated score and some behind the scenes footage and the theatrical trailer. So as a collector's edition with a lot of extra features, it's definitely worth picking up, especially if you're a fan of grisly, almost body horror type horror movies from the 80s. So I'm going to have to say that The Blob, the collector's edition, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next Blu-ray release, which also comes from Shout Factory. This is a little bit farther back in time, and this is The Devil Rides Out, which I think is alternately called The Devil's Bride. And this one stars Christopher Lee, and it came out in 1968, so it's been, that's over 50 years ago. In this one, Christopher Lee stars as a man trying to stop a family friend from being dragged into the world of Satan worship.
Rex, do you believe in evil?
That's an idea.
Do you believe in the power of darkness?
That's a superstition.
Now, there you are wrong. The power of darkness is more than just a superstition. It is a living force which can be tapped at any given moment of the night.
Why? On one night of one year, should these people live in mortal fear?
This is worth noting simply because Christopher Lee plays a hero in this one. Normally, Christopher Lee plays the bad guy. He played the mummy. He played Dracula. He played the Frankenstein monster. He's usually some dastardly villain type. Here, he plays a good guy. And it's him trying to stop this guy from who'd gotten wrapped up in Satanism. You've got Charles Gray from he's the narrator in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. He also plays Blofeld, I think, in Diamonds Are Forever, which is a James Bond movie. But it moves fast. Some of these old Hammer horror movies tend to drag a little bit, and they spend more time as a costume drama. This one doesn't. This one moves fast. This one has some real danger in there too, because they're summoning the devil, and it gets a little corny, but it really kind of escapes a lot of the corniness of the 1960s movies that you normally would weight a movie down like this. Again, this one has very much like The Blob. It's loaded with special features. It's got audio commentaries between film historians and actors, and it also has a couple film retrospectives on it. Has the original audio commentary, which includes Christopher Lee, who's no longer with us. And it has a behind-the-scenes video, these old sort of vintage special features that were in there while it was in an earlier digital release or DVD release. But yeah, it looks back at the Hammer films and has a still gallery and a theatrical trailer. So there's a lot of special features on here. It loaded up with audio commentaries. Even though the movie's over 50 years old, it's got a lot to have been said about it. So it's, again, totally worth seeing. Of all these Hammer horror movies that they've released recently, this is one I liked. It's topping the list. It reminds me a little bit of, there's another one, The Devil Takes a Daughter, The Devil Has a Daughter. And that one is another playing with the Satanism and the craze that was going on right in the 60s, which they started making movies about the devil and black magic, and that kind of rolls into the 70s as well. So I'm going to have to say that The Devil Rides Out as a horror movie release, vintage to check out and get the new disc, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other releases this week include The Wizard of Oz in 4K and the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jim Belushi buddy cop drama Red Heat in 4K. And that is it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Dr. Sleep, Midway, and Last Christmas. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.